special episode of Brick House. Got the fifth team in the Eastern Conference in our projected rankings, the number 12 team overall. I'm your host, Bob Johnson. Alongside me, my co-host,
Matt Baker.
Matt Baker. Hey,
that's
Matt.
That's me.
Got a guest today, a Washington Wizards fan himself, Kevin. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor after being cut out of my first appearance on Brick House. So hopefully this time I say enough interesting things to not get cut.
Let's hope. Let's hope. I think the Washington Wizards remind me of one of my favorite movies from the early 90s that involves skydiving and bank robbery, Point Break. I love the idea of Jared Dudley playing the undercover FBI agent in this analogy. He's Keanu Reeves. He's trying to find a group of notorious bank robbers that dress like presidents, Washington. And these guys, they dress like presidents to rob banks. He has a suspicion that these bank robbers might be a group of surfers or basketball players, as it were. Yeah, he's supposed to find the head of the gang. The heads of the gang are, you know, John Wall, obviously, but, you know, his real, like, muscle behind him is Gortat and Nene. Especially Nene, he looks like he could be in the movie Point Break. He's got that 90s punk rock hair, which is super dope. Yeah, Dudley, he's going undercover to infiltrate the group this season. But will he be able to? Will he be able to turn in his friends? Because once you catch those waves together, Kevin, it's hard to break that bond. Yeah, Wall and Gortat, they discover that Dudley is undercover in this story. And then things get a little sour because they kidnap his best friend on the team, Chris Humphreys. Chris Humphreys is kidnapped, and what they're going for is John Wall and Gortat. They're going to keep Chris Humphreys as a hostage until Dudley becomes their scapegoat and helps them fire Randy Whitman. This is all their goal. It's an elaborate plan.
Previously on the Washington Wizards.
So they originally started in Chicago as the Zephyrs. Fast forward, they went back several times between being the Baltimore Bullets, the Washington Bullets, the Capitol Bullets. But that whole D.C., Baltimore area is kind of one big city. So it's all in the family. So then they more or less did nothing for pretty much the 80s and 90s.
Okay.
Then shortly after that, they changed their name from the Bullets to the Wizards. There was some criticism there.
Did you mean to leave out the Tom Gugliotta era? did you intentionally?
Michael Jordan era? Yeah.
I have not gotten to the Michael Jordan era yet. So they changed their name to the Wizards before the Jordan era. And, you know, there was obviously controversy over Abe Polian said it was because of he was worried about gun violence in the city, which it's kind of an anomaly because the team name is originally from Faster Than a Speeding Bullet.
Oh yeah,
so
Superman.
Yeah, they wouldn't be like, well, there's a lot of murder that happened here. Let's name the team the Bullets. Like, obviously, they wouldn't do it because of
but
that.
But what was the thought process? Like, we lose in a race to Superman. Let's make it a team. Moving on. Washington Wizards is, how do you pronounce it, Kevin?
Ted Leonsis?
Leonsis. All I know is I looked him up on Wikipedia, and he lost a lot of weight. His Wikipedia picture looks just like if Ben Kingsley were playing a state senator who got a fake tan. It's pretty hilarious. And Leonsis, he made his money as a executive at AOL, of all things.
I think the Wizards are missing a real opportunity here to, at the beginning of every game, turn out the lights and then play the AOL connecting to a modem sound to start the beginning of the game.
That would be
before
funny.
Introducing the players.
You've got mail.
Yeah. That could be like the dunk or something, you know? Yeah. I think they're missing a real good chance to insert old AOL things into there.
That's brilliant. Yeah. We should, I'm glad the Leonsis is listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
You can send us a check, Matt. Make it out to Matt Baker. I have a conspiracy alert here, Kevin. Maybe you could shed some light on this. So the year prior to the John Wall draft, Leonsis owned 44% of the Capitals and the Mystics, the Wizards, and Verizon Center. That year, he completed his purchase of the remaining 56% equity for $310 million. It brought the whole Monumental Sports and Entertainment business to a total value of $825 million. My conspiracy, as I've said before on This Feels One-Sided, is that the NBA, when they find a new owner, or when they're shopping around trying to get their franchise fee whenever one of these teams changes hands, is that they sort of have a hush-hush, wink-wink deal where they're just like, yeah, I know you're buying a shitty team, but if you give us $800 million, we'll make sure you win the draft. And there's a really good player coming out. His name's John Wall. What do you think?
I can almost always be talked into a NBA draft lottery conspiracy, awesome. especially in the Stern days.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. But my hole in that theory is that I want to say it was that same year that Prokhorov bought the Nets. Mm. And the Nets, as I seem to recall, had a significantly worse record than the Wizards that year.
Right.
And if anyone was going to get that deal, let's be honest,
you'd be the man.
It was going to be Prokhorov.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good point. Interesting point. I think they got Derek Favors that year and then ended up flipping him for Darren Williams, who we talked about not too long ago. But let's talk about the players that are actually on this team. This is a basketball podcast, after all.
And now, the starting lineup for your Washington Wizards!
Kevin, who's your favorite player on the team as a Wizards fan?
I mean, obviously, John Wall.
John Wall's a stud. He is a stud. I saw him play in a game during the lockout in 2011 at Long Beach State. It was a game of all the guys from Baltimore versus all the guys from L.A. It was like the Drew League versus, I forget what the name of the league in Baltimore is. I don't think John Wall's from Baltimore per se, but
he's from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay, yeah. So he actually played on the team.
I think he either leads or is very much at the top of assists on three-pointers, especially corner threes.
Wow.
Which in 2015, I mean, that's obviously the way that the NBA is going. That's a pretty valuable skill to have your point guard be.
Yeah, but
yeah, I think you're right.
Keep in mind, he's no Reggie Jackson. Keep that in mind.
Him and Reggie Jackson have the same exact contract now.
Yeah, Wall even tweeted about it.
Yeah.
Which was kind of amazing.
Wall was, we talked about in a previous episode, usually NBA players don't do that to each other, but John Wall was not afraid.
Yeah, he wished he signed that contract a couple years later. But he'll get his. He'll get his.
He'll get at least one more big one.
Kevin, do you know Nene's first name?
Hilario.
That's what I thought, too. When I was looking it up, there's another name that I hadn't seen before, Maybiner. Maybiner Nene.
Mm-hmm.
I had it actually, I wrote out this depth chart a couple weeks ago, and I was revisiting it the other day, and I saw Maybiner on there. I was like, well, that's a typo. I've never heard of an NBA player named Maybiner before. But apparently, maybe that's like his third or fourth name. You know, a lot of these Spanish countries have, more than two or three names to them. Although he goes by, four letters for some reason.
Just Nene.
Pretty cool. We have the aforementioned punk rock Marcin Gortat in the middle. Matt at one point told me that he thought that Gortat might have been the greatest center in Suns history.
it's tough. There aren't that many great centers, pure centers in Suns history. So Gortat might be up there. He's definitely one of the fiercest looking, thuggish, brutish looking.
Here's the thing, though.
Yes,
he was always destined to be on the Wizards because he looks identical to the sorcerer or wizard in Fantasia.
Right.
That Mickey steals his hat.
Oh, man.
Look up a picture of it right now. Wow. He looks identical to that sorcerer.
So you did tell me that, and I did look it up, and you are correct.
He was always meant to be a wizard.
So one of the things that Gortat did this summer was, I would assume he forced Otto Porter Jr. to come over to Poland with him. Actually, Otto Porter probably went of his own volition, but Porter was over in Poland working out with Gortat this summer. and the Polish national team, which I saw via Instagram many times, which I don't know if that's relevant to the conversation, but hopefully it helps Otto Porter Jr. And now he's going to get pushed by another junior, Kelly Oubre. So
I think Jared Dudley would probably start at small forward this year if they wanted to insert a veteran into the lineup.
If he's healthy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was going to ask Kevin about Otto Porter. He's one of those guys, you know, like Derek Williams. He's been in the league 3 or 4 years now, and you're just all sort of sitting around wondering when he's going to make the leap.
Well, this is his third year coming up, so he's only played 2 years. And he looked abysmal his first year, especially for the number 3 overall pick.
Yeah, he didn't even play his first year, really.
Hardly at all. Yeah. His second year, during the season, he showed a little bit of promise. And then in the playoffs was great. He was, if we can get from him what he did in the playoffs during the entire regular season, that's good for an additional 7 or 8 wins at least, I got to figure. He was sensational in the playoffs. Great defender. He was our energy guy off the bench, kind of our, we were using him kind of the way the Thunder used to use James Harden. It'd be nice if he could start. And then hopefully Oubre could kind of fill that 6-man spot, who he's been looking pretty good so far. I think he might end up being the steal of the draft this past year.
Really?
I think he was the 18th pick or something like that.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
If you're getting a guy pick around 20 who can at least contribute as a rookie, that's pretty good. I would have liked to have kept Pierce. Honestly, in retrospect, we were probably worse off losing Ariza 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He's more or less a younger version of Paul Pierce, who's a better defender and a better 3-point shooter. It'd be nice to still have him. But losing Pierce, while tough, I think the Wiz can get past it this year, especially depending on Otto Porter's development and if Oubre is able to contribute in any some way off the bench.
Right.
Yeah, I think that might be a little optimistic, but I'm interested to follow that storyline and see how Kelly does. So there's a part of our show where we like to predict how this team's going to finish.
Record prediction.
What's your record prediction for them this year, Kevin?
I think they probably went 50.
50. That's exactly where I got them. 50-32. I see it, you know, mostly coming from improvement from Wall and Beal. I think those are the two guys that have the most upside. And
yeah, and Beal is in a contract year, so he's trying to get the max extension.
Yeah.
So that could be interesting. He's shown times where he can really take over games. He's an elite 3-point shooter. If we have a guy like Dudley who's healthy, who's also a pretty good 3-point shooter and can stretch the field, Beal could have a pretty special season.
The only knock on Beal is that he misses games. The most games he's played in 3 years is 73, and last year he only played 63. But when he plays those games, he averages 17 points, 15 points. He's going to get a ton of money next offseason.
In this new NBA, yeah, he's going to be making more than John Wall, I'm sure, on his next contract.
Can't wait for that tweet next year about Bradley Beal's contract.
Awkward. Matt, where you got him finishing this year?
I'll say 51.
He's always doing this. He's like, Price is Righting me every time.
That's the reverse Price. Is that the... No, that is the Price is Right. It works both ways. I was going to go less, but I just heard all these comments about what you two think, and I thought you guys are right on the money. But I think they're going to have... I think they're going to have a better year as far as record-wise. I think they won't have the second-half malaise like they had last year, and they'll carry it through.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, also on our show, there's this segment where I like to mention LeBron James every time.
What the fuck has anything got to do with LeBron James?
I've even explained to anybody, even though this is like our 20th freaking podcast, the reason I like to do this is because I feel like anytime I'm reading about basketball or watching a show about basketball, irregardless of the topic, they could be talking about, you know, the white kid from Division III basketball that scored 163 points, and they need to get LeBron James involved in the story somehow. Which is why we force LBJ into every episode of the NBA Brick House previews.
Whether it's relevant or not.
Completely unrelevant this time. Although reliving that Deshaun Stevenson rivalry earlier was pretty fun. My mention this time is about a Funny or Die video that I watched LBJ in this summer. It was promoting the Trainwreck video, or the Trainwreck movie, the Judd Apatow movie. I got to say that, if Judd Apatow movies were all like under 6 minutes, like this Funny or Die video, I would tolerate them a lot more. This one is pretty funny. He's in the show with Tony Romo, and Mari Stoudemire are also in it. The funniest scene has got to be Apatow is like playing one-on-one with LeBron, and he tries to blow in his ear to motivate him to be a better actor, like Lance Stevenson.
Yeah.
My favorite segment of the show, though, is where I've been getting to know Matt Baker.
And now it's time for a personal anecdote with Matt Baker.
I don't let people in very often, if ever. My parents still don't know me.
Yeah, well, I know you guys aren't super guarded about it or anything, but I know you are working together on a sports-related movie script. Matt's been telling me a little bit about it. Kevin, I've heard a little bit, maybe less about it from you, but it sounds very exciting, and I wanted to give you guys an opportunity, you know, to sort of pitch it. Give us a sneak peek, before the script starts circulating to the Hollywood power agents.
Kevin, have at it. Start us off.
Sure. So the script is the story is set in 1940. The main character that we meet is a gentleman in his mid-20s living in Brooklyn, New York, who is he's black. And he ends up – he's a football player, an American football player. And he ends up getting the opportunity to move to England to try his hand at learning to be a European football player.
Football.
Mm-hmm. And when he gets there, it's obviously pre-World War II, and he kind of ends up learning about the politics and the situation and the cultural climate.
Which country is he in?
In England.
Okay, cool.
And so he kind of learns about what's going on there as England is gearing up to enter World War II. And
he learns more about himself along the way.
Yeah. And what was interesting was at the same time he was learning more about himself, me and Baker were learning more about ourselves. Yeah.
Do you guys have like any movies that you could compare it to? Like they say, this is like Edward Scissorhands meets Pleasantville.
Yeah, that's actually how you described it. I don't know. It's tough because we use sports not as a sports movie, but more of a device, but people are automatically going to compare it to sports movies.
The one I think of actually is a recent one, Unbroken, that involved only in a little ways, a pre-World War II athlete who, you know, it ends up being involved in a movie that's not about running at all, but about something else.
But really, I think Baker is kind of selling it improperly. What we really did was we found the script for Remember the Titans online.
Okay.
And then we just changed the date at the beginning to 1940.
Yeah. Ooh.
And then we added a couple more soul singing scenes.
Well,
that's actually what the script is.
That's how Hollywood writes.
It's actually highly illegal what we did, and we could be sued at any moment.
We took some of the war scenes from Pearl Harbor too. And smash cut those.
Scorsese
right in there.
Actually took Gangs of New York and put it in present day, and that became the movie The Departed. So
yeah, we're plugging along with that right now, and it's been interesting. It's fun, but it's also, like I said, when people see sports, they automatically associate everything with sports. So it's fun and frustrating to try and make it sportsy, but not about the sports.
I'm just gonna call it Unbroken meets Invictus until you guys tell me otherwise.
Invictus. Yeah.
Dale, did you just become our agent?
I think he did.
Awesome.
We got representation on this thing.
On the next episode of Brick House.
I have a theory about this next team.
Ooh.
I don't know if it's going to be controversial, but this next team, they recently just changed their name. I'm not talking about the Bob Nets, but another franchise, a decent franchise. They changed their name. And I have a suspicion that they changed their name. You know, they say it's because, oh, it's from the state.
Yeah.
You know, it's a local reference. But I think they changed their name because they're trying to get the hipster dollar. And they're trying to attract people to buy their jerseys and hats and t-shirts and stuff who are outside of their market because their name is so fucking ridiculous.
You know, I love a good Bob conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I've got a couple coming up for us as we get to the top 12. So got that to look forward to on the next episode of Brick House. ¶¶